Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you, as usual. We'll explain the good one in a moment, because it's not exactly great news on the surface, but we think underlying all this is potentially good news. Today, the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, led by Daryl Issa, just a couple of weeks ago, they did the Benghazi hearings. Today, they're looking into the IRS scandal and the targeting of conservative organizations as they applied for tax-exempt status. The longtime head of that division, at least for much of the time that the scandal covers, was Lois Lerner. We learned yesterday she was going to plead the Fifth. Somebody clearly didn't teach her how to plead the Fifth, but we can talk about that later if time permits. But here's a couple of different clips, one from her during her opening statement, and then a back and forth between her and Chairman Issa.
I have not done anything wrong. I have not broken any laws. I have not violated any IRS rules or regulations, and I have not provided false information to this or any other congressional committee.
At this point, I believe you have not asserted your rights, but in fact have effectively waived your rights. Would you please seek counsel for further guidance on this matter while we wait?
I will not answer any questions or testify about the subject matter of this committee's meeting.
So people might be wondering, why would the fact that she refuses to testify be the good martini? And Jim, the right to not testify is the right to not incriminate yourself. So while she says she didn't do anything wrong, clearly there's an implication here that she actually did. And if there is, in fact, criminal activity on the part of her or anybody else, this is about to get even deeper real quick.
I am told, by the way, that you don't actually plead the Fifth. And a reader of the Morning Jolt complained a great deal that you can plead guilty, not guilty, nolo contendere. Nobody pleads the Fifth. You invoke your Fifth Amendment rights.
Right.
But I really needed to do that for the joke in the headline. So as far as I'm concerned, she pled the Fifth. But here's the thing. It's interesting that what it legally means has become the precise opposite of what it means in our culture and in our politics and in our perception of it. That basically when you are invoking your Fifth Amendment rights, you're basically saying, I don't want to answer that question because even though I'm not guilty, I'm afraid it may make me look guilty or may get, people to believe I've done something wrong and may expose me to criminal charges. It's kind of an interesting concept in law, but it goes all the way back to the Magna Carta. And the idea being that way back when, before we had our constitutional concept of the Bill of Rights, the idea was, well, if you won't testify, you must be guilty. And the Fifth Amendment and these kind of protections there are basically designed that refusal to testify doesn't automatically mean you're guilty. Although it's worth, at least in criminal cases, in civil cases, a jury can take that into account. And it's seen as something that is, seen as very suspicious. So, like I said, when you say I invoke my Fifth Amendment right, you're basically saying I don't want to look guilty. However, to everyone, it looks very, very guilty. And what's intriguing here is that the administration really is trying to have it both ways. They have something that is, terrible going on, like the IRS scandal, this unfair targeting of conservatives, which basically, violates the First Amendment, it violates the 14th Amendment's equal protection guarantees. They leaked sensitive information on conservatives to friendly media groups. Basically, you've got all kinds of criminal activity going on at the IRS, or at least there's reason to believe this. So Eric Holder announces he's going to begin an investigation, and he'll get to the bottom of this.
Oh, of course he will.
He can get to the bottom of it when he's done with James Rosen. He's going through his emails there. But because there's a criminal investigation going on, everybody can say, well, I can't comment on that. I can't answer any questions. The claim that she did nothing wrong is what was particularly bizarre about this. That basically we know that the IRS was asked directly about this by Congress several times. And nobody fessed up. Nobody had said this was under investigation. Nobody said we were hearing some allegations and we're looking into this. Here are the standards we have in place. Basically, their attitude is, well, we didn't lie. We just withheld information from you. Strangely enough, members of Congress are not so forgiving of that. They don't see that as worlds apart, as the IRS officials tend to do. So this is, for those of us who think that there's some serious wrongdoing going on at the IRS, whether it comes from on high, from Obama, or whether it just represents a deeply corrupt culture within the Internal Revenue Service, seeing a fairly key person suddenly refuse to answer questions is a good indicator to the public there is more going on here. Also, by the way, notice that My understanding is that Josh Marshall of Talking Points Memo, a liberal blogger, as well as Ezra Klein of the Washington Post, both have called for firings at the IRS, and that Lerner is the most likely person to end up left holding the bag for all this. What's really kind of intriguing is, oh, by the way, those people were at the West Wing yesterday in some sort of secret meeting. So it's almost as if the new talking points have gone out, the favorite reporters of the administration have gone out, and Lerner is being cast as the scapegoat. And, you know, perhaps there's more story to be told, and maybe this goes up a little higher than we've been led to believe so far.
And that might explain why Daryl Issa was pretty nice to her as she waffled her way through her right to not testify today. So could be more to come on that. We'll stay tuned. On to the bad martini now, and on to Benghazi. And this is, we know from the last couple of weeks, Jim, that the FBI identified through security cameras and so forth who they think is largely responsible, who they want to pursue in this investigation is actually carrying out this attack. But there's a problem. Five men have been identified by the U.S. as linked to the attack on a diplomatic mission in Benghazi, Libya, though they remain at large as the FBI seeks to gather sufficient evidence for a civilian trial. According to the Associated Press, the five individuals thought to be responsible for the attack in which four were killed, including U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens, could be taken into custody by the U.S. military, though sufficient proof seems to be lacking to try them in civilian court. Two problems here. Number one, why do we not have that evidence after so many months? And secondly, isn't this a perfect example of why we need military tribunals?
My observation in the morning jolt was, now Obama's getting iffy on droning people. Wouldn't these guys be your classic, you know, well, if there's somebody who's dronable, somebody who's involved in an attack that kills our ambassador and kills three other Americans, that you'd figure they'd be top of the enemies list, right, Greg?
You'd think so.
You'd think. Drone attacks are not like the fine china that we only take out for special occasions. Apparently, according to this collection I linked to today, in Pakistan and Yemen, we've launched about 450 drone strikes and killed anywhere from 2,300 to 3,700 militants and bad guys. So we can kill literally thousands of bad people, or people who we believe are a potential threat to Americans over in these countries. But we're not going to kill five guys who we know killed four Americans? The idea that, you know, all of a sudden these guys, we can't go after them until we've got an airtight case against them, seems really bizarre. It kind of represents the complete jumble that Obama administration counterterrorism policy is, because you have circumstances like this in which these guys are walking around and maybe plotting further attacks. Who knows what these guys are up to? Maybe they're laughing at how the United States has not been able to get them. They're doing that, but at the same time, we use the drone strikes. And, you know, I think any fair examination of the drone strike policy will recognize that, you know, when you're trying to target terrorists off in the, you know, far off lands of Yemen and Pakistan, you will kill civilians in the process. It just seems kind of random, you know, or that we'll use it in some countries and not in others. And allegedly, the reason we're not nabbing these guys militarily is it'll hurt our relationship with the Libyan government. Well, you'll recall from Greg Hicks' testimony that the Libyan government basically stopped cooperating us after Susan Rice went on the Sunday shows and said that he was not accurate when he said that this was a pre-planned Al-Qaeda attack. None of this makes sense. The explanation that was out there, the relationship with the new Libyan government, and now the idea that these guys are walking around out there, but we can't get them because we can't get an indictment or something.
On to the crazy martini now, and I think we all knew this was coming, but in the middle of the night, the latest exciting entrant into the New York City mayoral race released his video, and of course, he had to address certain things.
Look, I made some big mistakes, and I know I let a lot of people down, but I've also learned some tough lessons. I'm running for mayor because I've been fighting for the middle class and those struggling to make it my entire life. And I hope I get a second chance to work for you.
That's former Congressman and Twitter fan Anthony Weiner. Jim, I'm sure you're just really, really depressed that he joined this campaign.
During the South Carolina special election, a lot of people said, well, if you're okay with Mark Sanford coming back, are you okay with Anthony Weiner coming back? Look, leave it up in the hands of the district. If they decide he's the best choice, let them nominate him. So I suppose I should apply the same philosophy to the Anthony Weiner candidacy and say, all right, New York, it's in your hands. You decide whether you want this guy to be your mayor. What's kind of intriguing is if you look at the rest of that ad, it's kind of cookie cutter. If it was just another member of Congress making this, most people kind of look at it and shrug, or a lot of folks on the right might agree. He has a comment about, you know, regulations strangling small businesses and schools that are not up to snuff. This is a very standard issue stuff. But because it's Anthony Weiner, you just start chuckling immediately. This is the most ridiculous figure in modern politics, trying to act like everything is normal and hoping no one brings up the elephant in the room. It was an interesting argument that came out from somebody over at Commentary back when there was first word that Wiener was thinking of running for mayor. They said, look, you wonder if Sanford and the culture of South Carolina, when he talks about God's forgiveness and seeking God's forgiveness and stuff, whether you might actually find a more forgiving electorate in a place like South Carolina than you might in hard-bitten New York City, which is a little more cynical about these things and might just say, ah, here we go again. It's the same old, he's not really sorry he did it. He's sorry he got caught, et cetera, et cetera. So it will be fascinating. Remember, this is New York City, so there aren't really many good options for folks on the right. I know there's one candidate who somebody was telling me they were pretty excited about. But at this point, your options are really left-wing Democrats or Wiener, a amusing and comical, ridiculous left-wing Democrat. And so for entertainment value, perhaps Anthony Wiener might be the best choice for New York City. Also, I don't know his policy on large sodas. Being pro-large soda... let's put the creepy guy who flirted with underage gals on Twitter. Let's go with him. Let's see what he can do. So.
Well, he is not doing well in the early polls, but there's a long way to go. As you mentioned, it's not a real distinguished field. And I should point out that the video begins with him picking up his very young son from a high chair, and it ends with an endorsement from his wife, Huma Abedin. So basically, that's his way of saying, my family's moved on. Why can't you, New York?
Greg, he's such a nice guy, isn't he? He's a real family man. What was all that controversy about? You know, it'll be really amusing. There are many days I wish, you know, Andrew Breitbart were still with us, but this would be one in particular. Could you imagine him just, like, taking the podium every single stop? You might argue that the only reason it is safe for Anthony Wiener to run for mayor is because Breitbart is no longer with us. And for those who, you know, just going back to the Sanford thing, like, when Sanford came back from Argentina, he started talking about his affair and just wouldn't stop talking about it in, you know, kind of agonizing detail. Remember, Wiener was the one who kept saying it was Breitbart who hacked his account and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Maybe the electorate may want to look at that and say, how does this person react when they're caught with their hand in the cookie jar, which a metaphor which really sounds bad with Wiener. But then again, all metaphors sound pretty bad when it comes to Anthony Wiener.
It certainly does. And now, if he makes a formal public announcement and his wife is with him, I think somebody should ask her questions about Benghazi. I think that would be a fantastic to run that press conference. But something tells me New York media might not do that.
Circle today.
Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again for the Thursday edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.